That was the first part of the discussion. We now continue with threats and growth opportunities for the trucking industry within the AFTA. Supercool Retreads delivers excellent cost per kilometre.
All right. Welcome back, everyone. What we're going to do next is, after we've heard about the impact, we'd like to talk about the challenges and threats that we're going to have through the ASEAN economic community. And I'd like to start with the transport side of things. What are the threats that you foresee will come your way? Because it's not, where there is light, there is obviously also dark.
Well, Stefan, we have to look, number one is on the economic of scale. Which of the area would have cheaper drivers? Which area will be having a lower cost on purchasing of trucks, purchasing of materials, tire, spare parts? These are the fear I think we will have, or the advantage that the transport industries will have. Example, if the Thailand tires are cheaper, what is there for us to change our tires in Thailand rather than in Kuala Lumpur? If the truck drivers in Thailand are cheaper, can we employ them? So your inter-country trade or inter-country facilities, products are being shared. So that will be actually be coming to a better costing. And in the end of the day, a cheaper product. Okay. So actually there is no fear into actual ASEAN. There's only more advantages and more cost impact if you have a proper planning on your logistic area. I think the facilities can be shared among ASEAN rather than, you know, the integrated of our integrated topic of fears. I think that would be a better area to work in.
Okay. The tire side of things was mentioned quite a few times just now. Yep. What do you think, are there any threats, any challenges that you will be facing?
Okay, again coming back to duties and taxes, this will be key to determining the prices of the product. Like I say, some of the fleet operators we deal with, well, customers, they change tires in Thailand, for example. So which means that fleet operators in Thailand already have a cost advantage straight up when they buy tires right there. So when they compete with Malaysian companies, just the first thing, tire, you're already out of the game. So what about other things like spare parts, maintenance, driver salaries, driver benefits? So to be really competitive, there are many, many things that needs to be looked at. And this is an entire ecosystem. So the supporting facilities must be right there and should be equal for all before everyone can benefit.
As a whole country, that means Malaysia needs to be more competitive. Isn't that right?
Well, you're asking me, right?
Yeah.
I rather not use the word cheap. All right. I think it's got a lot of different connotations. But I think the core in this globalized world is about competition. And therefore, we have to ensure that whatever products or services that we render has to be competitive. And that competitiveness comes about because the governments in the region have undertaken to create an economic community where they've agreed that barriers to trade, goods, services, investments will be eliminated, will be minimized at least. And by doing that, there's a cost saving for the private sector. Then they can ensure that the product or the services they render is priced competitively. Yep. For example, I give you a simple example. Today, if you want to export to Thailand or any other under the ASEAN free trade agreement, you have to come to the ministry for endorsement. The preferential form has to be endorsed by ministry. But we are trying by end of this year to come out with what we call a self-certification scheme, which means that if you are exporting a product, you just have to endorse in your own invoice, in your own office, say that the product complies with the requirements of the ASEAN Economic Community, and you can export. That's cost saving. Otherwise, you have to get your messenger to come to the ministry,
to run us.
So we are moving forward. That's why I say the economic community is about creating a very facilitative, comparative business environment. But of course, when you do self-certification, doesn't mean you do it yourself. You have to first come and register. We will give you a serial number. With the serial number, you can move forward. Then that's only one time, you know. Right now, for every shipment, you have to come back to the ministry. Under self-certification, it's just one application approved, and then it's for lifetime. Unless the circumstances of your business change, you have to come back to us. And that's onus is on you. So these are what I mean by creating a very facilitative and competitive business environment within the region. For example, in this case, a clear example is whether vehicles can move across border freely. If that happens, I'm sure then the businesses will know how to adjust themselves.
Thank you. The word cheap came up just now, and I know that GIB products are engineered for safety. Can you be safe and cheap?
Safe and efficient. That will be the key. Right. Yeah, cheap, there's many connotations. Mostly people regard it with cheap per piece, for example. If you go to a supermarket, you buy a bag of rice cheap, yeah, per bag. But you really got to look at a couple of areas. For example, how can a product perform on the road? What's your stopping distance, for example? What's the water dispersion level? You know, there's so many things that comes along with it. And for example, if you pay $10, but you only get 5 kilometers out of the product. But if you pay $15 and you get 50 kilometers out of it, then you get efficiency, right? So cost per kilometer will be the key.
So it's not the competition based on price that, that you would be looking at within the region.
Yes.
As for trucks, how much is a truck? You think that there will be a challenge coming up with other manufacturers that might be cheaper than a premium truck from Europe?
We have seen in the past, and it is still ongoing, that the budget segment has been expanding, and for several reasons, most probably the demand and also the promotion, where Scania as a brand sits in a premium segment where we provide a long-term solution for a specific targeted customer that has similar business objective. It has been all the way that we look into adding values rather than cutting down prices. You know, it's really not the ball game that we like to play whenever we enter into a business. It's always a cutthroat, and the price aggressiveness of strategy is being applied. So therefore, looking at taking advantage of this Asian economic community cooperation, looking at cutting down costs, we introduce features like fleet management system that is automating or helping our land operators to have a more regulated records on their truck behaviors in terms of fuel consumption, in terms of the driver's behavior, that could lead to a lot of total operating economy at the end of the year. So we are actually helping our land operators by automating it and analyzing it together with them, and be able to advise them on which area they could lead to a certain cost saving that can improve their profitability. So that is our way of contributing to the cost saving, actually, rather than just reducing prices.
To add on to that, yes, I think data and analytics will be key for improving the performances of the fleet operators. And we also employ the same thing, but specifically for tyres, looking at what type of pattern, what type of brands that are suited for what routes, suited for what application, and how can they make further savings. So this is part of our plans to make operators more efficient going on in the market.
Okay. Back to Billy, would you expect a consolidation of businesses? Are you thinking that smaller players would go out of business because they can't compete on such a big level?
No, Stephen. I think it's the other way around. As the bigger player, has a bigger area of operation, you will need a smaller player to support you for your local distribution.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you want to cover both areas, that, you know, if you have the equipment and the manpower and the cost-effective operation to handle that, that will be the best way. I think you can't look at it, play the full market at the same time. You've got to concentrate into one area where you are, I say, it's not cheap, but it's a cost-effective operation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The cost-effectiveness comes up in the term of service, in term of efficiency, in term of delivery time, in terms of financing costs. You like I say, you may have delivery from Thailand to Malaysia by ship that takes you 7 days. Your cost effectiveness by truck is only 3 days. If you have borderless operation, it may take you only 24 hours. So in form of costing, it will be much cheaper and more efficient to deliver by trucks within 24 hours rather than 3 days or rather than 7 days. In fact, if you are talking about 24 hours, you are in fact even faster than the air freight. You have a lot of custom to deal with, the clearance, the docking in, the delivery, the custom clearance again, and the docking out, and the re-delivery again in Thailand.
Mm.
So a cost-efficient operation plays a very big role now in your logistic operations.
Okay. Will you have problems finding drivers to support all the business that will come your way?
Well, assistingly, we are also having this problem of drivers. You know, the area where we are looking at is more or less, again, an area where you can work effectively with your sizable fleet.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than if you increase your fleet together, you're going to face a lot more problem to source the drivers, whether they are working for you properly or not, efficiently or not, cost impact, you know, security wise. So there's a lot more factors involving rather than just only increase your fleet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have to look into that.
More trucks means more repairs and more maintenance. Same question, how difficult is it to find mechanics that can actually service the vehicles?
as of today, and it is ongoing actually, Stefan, we have specific standard to follow globally on a certain level of mechanic competency required for Scania specific product and the ongoing training that is required to keep this competency increased so that we can actually develop this person to another level, most probably train the trainer level. Therefore, with this program takes in, it's just about looking at what pool of talent that we have in country specific, and then just rope them in once they are hired into the program of this global specification that we have, and then ensuring that we have a higher level of retention rate despite of the competition, yeah, where a lot of staff pinching is in now. For us in Scania, the moment one person has acquired a certain level of competency, it's a degree of job satisfaction that actually holds them back and stays with us rather than more on dollar sign driven kind of a motivation factor for them to hop around. Mm. And it's always the tradition of Scania to be proud of this. So therefore, we keep this tradition continues and we keep our retention program all the time and make it as an annual employee engagement. So therefore, we look at that as our strength and we like to move forward from there and each of these little country that we are operating in this region.
Yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you're already moving staff around within the region, right? In the workshops?
Yes, we do. as of any needs required in any other countries, if there is a need of, especially to those who have enhanced to a level where they are at a trainer level, then that's where we can mobilize them into the other countries to start and spill over the knowledge and competency that to the newer staff. Yeah?
Again, a question for Mitty. Could you just elaborate on how challenging it is to harmonize legislation? What if we were to just look at one particular aspect, what would one have to think of?
As I mentioned earlier on, harmonization of rules or regulations and standards is work in progress. It's not that we are ignoring the process. The challenges are because, you know, ASEAN is made of 10 countries, and clearly we can divide the 10 into 3 or 4 major tiers, tier 1, tier 2, tier 3. You can look in terms of per capita incomes, in terms of population, in terms of economic development. Countries like Myanmar, Cambodia, or Laos, you know, they do not have strong institutions, for example, standards institutions. So they require time. They need capacity building. Programs to be put in place in terms of human resources. Because when you adopt a standard and you want to implement those standards, you need people to enforce. And they need to understand. You need to create awareness of those standards. So and then right now, you know, we have 10 different rules and regulations in place. But I would think that moving forward beyond 2015. It's part of the 2016-2025 agenda. We are actually working on it now. And it will take some time before... You see, in EU, we have a single body in Brussels which issues all the directives, and all countries are supposed to adhere. In our case, it is by consensus. So even if you want to adopt a particular standard, it's by consensus. Mm-hmm. We have to negotiate and agree by consensus. So it's going to take time. That's a real challenge. So I'm just giving a comparison. EU is an enforcement authority. They decide on a particular directive and they send it out to the 27, and 27 will follow. In our case, we can't do that. We have to negotiate first, adopt the standard, and then implement.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
It's consensus-based law, you know.
I guess language is also a challenge, right?
Well, language is a challenge. Labeling requirements, for example, we don't have a common ASEAN. Of course, ASEAN, the charter says English is the common language, but then national legislation also requires you to have labeling according to their domestic requirements. So that's also a challenge. I think moving forward, I think beyond 2016-2025, what we need to look at is coming up with common ASEAN directives. We have done for cosmetics. We have ASEAN cosmetics directives. We have ASEAN medical device directives. So that sets up a common standard that you have to follow. There could be variations, one or two elements, additional requirement for country-specific reasons, but that's fine. But at least it's transparent that if I am a medical device manufacturer, I come into ASEAN, this is the directive I have to follow. So really, I think that's the way forward, and that will help businesses within and as well as those coming from outside, that they need to just adopt one particular standard for the 10 markets. Right now, no. Right now, it's still work in progress.
Okay, thank you. In terms of raw materials, tire casings are apparently what you call raw material. You think that there will be a shortage? Will there be an increased competition for tire casings that you need in order to run your operations?
Okay, looking at the competitive landscape at this moment, we have a lot of new tire manufacturers coming into the region. These are, for example, companies like Hankook, where they have a new investment in Indonesia. Of course, traditional manufacturers like Bridgestone and Michelin, they are already in Thailand. So the competitiveness will start coming in because people like Hankook will be desperate for market share, for example. And at the same time, their products are also good. which is very healthy for the industry overall. So when there are more and more of these casings or new tires that have been generated and used locally, then this opens up another possibility for retreading. Yeah, and opens up another possibility of saving costs for the fleet operators.
Okay. Yeah.
So you don't have to depend so much on imports of used tires from countries like Japan or Korea.
Okay,
yeah.
Interesting. One thought about truck manufacturing, back to Roslan. You assemble trucks here in Malaysia as well as in Thailand. Wouldn't it be enough to have one facility?
Fair question. In terms of economies of scale, theoretically, that would be a very ideal case for us to have. As of today, we have seen different regulations and registration processes as well as tax structures that applies between these two countries. Therefore, the decision of having these two CKD areas separately is being decided. Moving on from now in the future, I wouldn't know what would be the real answer for that, but ideally, if we can have a regional supply, would be a bit more competitive. And it depends on the coming business landscape. If the AEC is moving well into the correct direction at a much faster speed, we could also put into a lot of consideration and speed up consideration there whether it would be economical to have a single production center or still keeping these two centers apart and serve each country equally. Yeah.
Currently, what would be the biggest challenge that you're facing in the market?
I would say in terms of registration and processes, very much country-specific individuals and the degree level of difficulties of each registration process lies within each country's specific rules and regulations. Yeah, so therefore, one country to another to learn what processes required for a truck to be processed, registered, and delivered to a customer, that would translate into probable delivery lead time that could affect our land transporters' plan to have the machines ready and up and running by then. That would actually be a critical deciding factor. If it is a less complicated registration process, that would lead to a shorter delivery lead times, would give an added advantage for us in the competition in the market at the moment. So therefore, we have to treat it case by case at the moment. And let's see from now on how the business landscape to be in the future.
Okay. Billy, how long would you have to wait for a truck?
Well, Stephen, that's a very tough question. First, we need to have our license. Then we need to purchase a truck. The delivery of the truck may take you 1 to 3 months. Your registration, again, will take you between 1 to 3 months. By the time you get a truck out, it could easily take you 4 to 6 months.
So you would need to know today what's right. going to happen in 6 months' time, whether or not you need additional yes. vehicles to move your order volume.
Right. We are virtually planning for the third quarter of this year now.
Yeah. On top of that, Stephen, if I can add Please. Up to that, a different tax structure would drive a different business setup. In Malaysia and Thailand, we decided to go on CKD due to this incentive on import duty exemption. Therefore, would make the end price to the land transporter a bit more competitive compared to the rest of other competitors. Countries like Singapore and the rest of other ASEAN countries like Laos, Cambodia, Philippines, Myanmar, Vietnam, they are all under CBU supply setup where the tax structure wouldn't be that punishing for the end price to be less competitive in the market. Therefore, you know, it would lead to that problem when we have a CKD. It involves in kids arriving from the original country like us in Sweden, and then we have times of traveling through the oceans, unbundling it and have it locally assembled. And then the process of registration itself, it takes several steps. Like what Billy said, it's true. We require SPED to be around. We require certain other government agencies to follow along the processes. And at the moment, that is a standard process where not only Scania is subjected to, the rest of other competition is also doing the same. Therefore, it's to the benefit to the customer, to the end user, to the land transporter. If there is any easier processes, that would benefit them most. And we are just here to facilitate the process to make it a bit more faster. And we look at AEC as a good platform in the future. If we can have a bit more harmonized code or policies or a standard way of working so that we can shorten this lead time of delivery and would benefit most of the land transporter when they're doing transborder businesses.
One other challenge, interestingly enough, I've been to Thailand and people tell me that the counterfeiting of intellectual property goes to that point where people build buses and trucks and stick your logo on it, even though it's not your product. You expect that to increase as well? Will there be more like that? People trying to cut corners, drive down cost?
I believe this problem will not ease away just like that. I mean, there will be always one problem after another. Even we solve this, then another problem comes in. About counterfeiting, we have our product to the global standard that we have set, and we have set a way of identifying how our original product would perform. So therefore, it's the end result that the land transporter would feel, and then immediately they can respond back to us. And most of our customers, loyal customers, they are in close contact with us. And normally, if this is happening in the market, we will have the feedback quicker than we can act upon it, no matter where it is. Obviously, to the countries where we have our dealers, or we are still not properly represented, that would be a bit of a tricky market to deal with. But then again, it's finally the original product that really performs up to the best profitability to our land transporter. So therefore, they would be the one that our most concern, and they will give constant feedback to us on this case. Yeah. Stefan?
Okay, thanks. The Malaysian truck drivers, if you could give us an assessment on them, Billy, are they competitive?
Actually, Stefan, our Malaysian truck drivers is a class on its own. We have actually been dealing with Thai drivers, Vietnamese drivers, I mean, in our operation, in the Vietnam as well as in Thailand. Overall, I would say our standard of driving is quite good. The standard of education of our driver, even though low, is still quite good in ASEAN. You know, I will see your problem of communication is the main problem. But in form of standard drivings and all this and that, with the highway that we are having and the drivers that we are having, we can actually upgrade our drivers quite easily rather than, you know, in the ASEAN drivers.
You've got programs that monitor behavior and all this, correct?
Oh, yes. Second, we have been actually geared up to be one of the subsidiary of Nippon Express that deals with CDM, what we call Clean Development Mechanism Project. This is coming to a transfer of credit that we can actually transfer this credit back to Japan side. And we have been gearing this for the past 4 to 5 years. And with that one, we have been actually train our drivers how to drive more efficiently, more economically, and safely. With this one, we actually save quite a fair bit of fuel, and we transfer that into monetary wise to reward back to the drivers that has done a more efficient driving. And we have also progressed that, I think, under the German TUV that has also embarked, I think, like Scania or other manufacturers, that they are embarking on train-the-trainer program. So we also emphasize that driving efficiency operations. We have also started our train-the-trainer program by using our driver instructor to be as a trainer. So no more as a driver, but as a trainer.
Mm-hmm.
And they will be emphasizing more on driving efficiency rather than not just driving. So with that, the cost impact is quite good. And individual company or individual operation-wise, we can manage to actually reduce our costs in form of diesel, in form of maintenance, in form of tire wear and tear, by just driving efficiently. Well, that's what we're having now.
Okay, good. I believe we've learned quite a bit in this session. I've heard that some of the media have specific questions that you would like to ask the panel here in front of the audience. Is that right? Do we have questions that you would like to ask?
Okay, members of the media, any questions for our speakers here?
Okay, can I, Stefan, can I just make 2 points? This is simply because of what Billy and colleague from Scania has mentioned. Import duties are nil, zero for parts, components or vehicles within ASEAN. There's no import duty. So you can manufacture and trade in those products at zero duty. I think what he is referring to, Scania was referring to, is the domestic, what you call, beyond the border measures. These are sales tax, excise tax, which are not been harmonized. We have different application of excise duties. Different countries have different rates. I think that's what you are saying.
Yes,
so it's not the import duty. I just want to make that clarification.
Thank
so that,
that.
Media don't... So, for example, in the case of Malaysia, we have excise duty, which ranges for the passenger vehicle between something like 65 to 100. You know, in Thailand, it might be 15 to 30%. In Indonesia, maybe below 20. So that's not been harmonized. So these are all work for the future, the next 10-year plan.
Yeah.
So that's the first point. The second one is on upgrading of skills. This is what we are saying. We need to ensure that human resource within ASEAN, we have 620, it's going to be 700, 70% a youthful population. The youths in ASEAN now must acquire the right skills and meet the requirements of the industry. And I think that's a challenge for us.
Mm.
How do we know what the industry? So we have to work, the governments have to work closely with the industry, as well as the businesses, to identify the requirements for their requirement. And as a result, I think there are a number of skill centers in Malaysia, both government and private, which are now working closely with the industry, where they're saying, for example, if you need a skillful driver, then the skill centers will then produce drivers according to his requirement, or a technician, for example. So I think I just want to make these 2 points, that skills upgrading is a must in a very competitive economic community.
Yes.
Thank you.
Stefan, may I add something here?
Sure.
Mr. Ravindran, of course, the skilled people has to be acquired, and somebody along the line has to train these people.
Mm.
So it actually has been very costly to train, let's say even like for outside a driver. After when we train the driver, the competitor will offer a better rate. So we will lose drivers. So at the end of the day, we say, oh yeah, what are we going to do? We just add on, you know, and it's becoming very expensive to do this. So we actually can appreciate if the driver can, if the government can support along the line where they have a subsidized training area that we can send our drivers to. So everybody doesn't feel so much of a pinch. So, I mean, these are the pool of trained people that can be upgraded. And actually, we have people that's going around in ASEAN. That, as I mentioned before, Malaysian drivers are actually not so bad. You know, you have communication problems around Vietnam, Cambodia, Thailand, where it's very difficult to train. How can you train a Thai drivers in Thai? You need the foreign expertise to come and do that. You know, where Malaysian drivers are actually quite good in that area. But we still need the support of the government to upgrade our people. There's no way that individual company can do with a wide area of training, where even if we put in all our effort, it will still be quite expensive for us to maintain year after year.
All right, members of the media, any questions for our speakers?
Sorry, just now you said that Malaysia truck drivers are better than the rest in comparison regionally. Right now, how many truck drivers do we have? Do we have enough? Because I've spoken to some smaller SME logistic companies and they said there's a problem talent retention even in truck drivers, where truck drivers jump from one company to the other. Is it something that is prominent in the Malaysian industry and regionally?
Yes, we are short of drivers. As the country progress, of course, more equipment will be on the road, more operators will be required, and that's where the driver's demand is higher than the supply. So it's quite easy for the drivers to source jobs. That is becoming our nightmare, because every time when we have a problem with a driver and we want to take some action against them, they just leave and go to the next company. You know, yeah. So that is the main thing that we have. This is one of our, I would call it, setback in our training areas. So we have to take a more softer trend, you know, by educating them, you know, rather than punishing them and then they run off. You know, so we have to need a lot more education here.
Can I just add to what Mr. Billy has mentioned? I think it's important, you know, this whole process of registration of drivers. Right now, if you're talking about cross-border movement of goods, we need to ensure that the drivers are registered, they are vetted, so the consignment that goes with the lorry doesn't go missing. So the onus is on the companies, the businesses, to have proper registration of drivers. So if the drivers, sometime the cargo that he sends might be switched along the way. Now, who takes responsibility for that? Because when you're talking about cross-border movement, it's not the government. It is the company that's very important for companies to take ownership and ensure that the drivers are properly registered and vetted so that they are to minimize unscrupulous practices.
I'd like to add on to the add-on. I'd like to ask you how much you earn. And I'm going to tell you the numbers that we've been given as to how much a truck driver can make in a month. If you have general cargo, people would walk home with about 4,000 to 4,500 ringgit a month. If you have a dangerous goods driver, petroleum, chloride, those kind of things, they would drive much less because they are subjected to limited hours that they are driving. And they walk home with 10,000 to 12,000 ringgit a month. Wow. So you say, wow, that's a lot. Now I'm asking you, if that's the money that's up for take, why is there a shortage of drivers? Because no one wants to do that job, because it has a bad reputation, it's got a bad perception. That's another problem that you can't simply address by paying more money. Yeah? Would I want to be a truck driver? No, because I would be ashamed to say that in front of my friends. Whereas if you say I work in PR or I'm a doctor, I'm a secretary, or I work as a receptionist in a hotel, that's all fine. I've had instances where I said, yeah, we deal with the trucking industry and we do this, we do that. The question that came was, tell me honestly, are all these truck drivers on drugs? Yes, as much as the members of the media are on drugs, or an accountant is on drugs, or your average lawyer takes cocaine in the evening, right? That's the problem. So would you want your kid to say, I want to be a truck driver?
Thank you, Stefan. Okay, the next question.
This question is addressed to Billy. I just want to know that after you carry out the training for the driver, you say you save costs because it's more efficient and you reduce costs in fuel. Do you can you tell us how much more? How many percentage of the cost saved because of this cost carry out?
It can go up from 5 to 7% of your fuel costs. Example, when we in our trucking operation, we spend like 500,000 ringgit a month just on diesel. A 5% meaning is a 25,000 ringgit saving. You know? So we convert that into our saving, and it's rewarding back to the drivers on a certain scale. We have the grading that you are top 10% of our standard driving standard. We will reward you with so much. Then if you save, you're in the top 20%, then you get so much. If you're top 75%, top 25%, you also get another reward. Below the 75% level, we think you are not saving at all. No. You are doing the same job as the next driver. Why you can't get the amount of saving as the next driver? No. So all this is not actually due to a skill, but more or less due to their responsibility and attitude of driving. You know. Once if they have the correct application to do that, they can actually save us some money, and they can, at the end of the day, be rewarded by doing just plain, typical driving.
All right, thank you. Any other?
Yeah, here.
Hello, can I ask Mr. Billy, I'm from Sinju Delhi. How would the training would address the communication problem between the different countries, like the Thailand and Vietnam, for the truck driver? Is that they're able to address it?
I can't get your question. Can you repeat, please?
Yeah, I mean that how would the training can address the communication problem, the language, the different language between the Asian country?
Okay, our training language are mostly in English. And this training skill people are mostly foreigners. So it depends where are the trainer coming from. No. Like if let's say Scania will send their people from Germany, from Sweden, from Europe, where they have acquired skills along the way as they are already in the higher level of earning, where I think you come in, I say, efficiency, your proper driving skills, and your responsibility and attitude comes in. It just doesn't just driver, doesn't mean just drive. You know, you have to drive with the attitude.
I think he's asking about the different languages in different countries.
So I mean that, let's say about a Malaysian driver, they are going to Vietnam, sending the goods. When they're facing some problem at the local places, how is it they're going on? The miscommunication.
Okay, like earlier mentioned, once if we have a borderless area in ASEAN, we definitely have to involve the local company, like in the Nippon Express Vietnam or Nippon Express Thailand, to be able to assist one another, feeling which we will also not be able to communicate in Thai or in Vietnamese.
Hi, I'm from Cars, Bikes and Trucks. I have a question for Mr. Roslan. Hi. So in gauging the impact of AFTA, is Scania embarking on any projects or programs? And that said, how is the demand for your trucks currently?
Can you repeat that once more?
In gauging the impact of AFTA, is Scania embarking on any specific programs or projects?
For us, business as usual, because with or without AFTA, we are gearing towards our business objective, which is doubling the growth in the next 5 years. Therefore, looking at all our product offering, our promotional campaign, our positioning, it will be very much geared towards the business objective that we have agreed earlier. And it's just that if there is any change significantly with this introduction of AEC or progressiveness of this AEC into the coming years, a bit more active, then we'll see from time to time if there is any additional activities that we could do to in support to that. Other than that, still business as usual.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Any questions?
Regarding to the just now, Mr. Billy said he hopes that government can give support to subsidize the training of the truck driver, right? Can you tell us how much is the cost of training a truck driver? So how much you want the government to subsidize, or how is the way to subsidize?
Well, example, one training scheme that we have attended under TUV. TUV is like the SIRIM in Germany. They have a specified trainers for drivers. And we estimated their cost of conducting a 4 days training course, 2 days practical, 2 days theoretical, will cost each driver in the region of about 3,000 to 5,000 ringgit for that course. So if, let's say, if we are going to send three people, it will cost us quite a fair bit, you know. So the appreciation, if the government can be able to allow us some form of a tax deduction, you know, because these are the expenses. Actually, it's a company expense to upgrade our driver into the training. It's not the company expense for our own benefit, you know. So at the end of the day, when the driver are being better, they can also drive more efficiently. We can also earn more, and you got to pay higher tax. So I hope the government can do something along that line, where if not let's say subsidies are where they pay to you, but allow us to offset against our income tax.
But you're entitled to get HRD fund, right, for training?
I'm not sure, but this will, yeah, should be able
but
to.
But I think the train. Issue Billy highlighted was more in terms of having common training centers. Yes. So there will not be pinching of drivers. Mm-hmm. I think in his case, he said he drives, he spends 4,000 to 5,000 to train someone, and then along comes another company, just pinches the driver, the skilled driver, by just paying him probably 200-300 ringgit more.
Yes.
So, you know, so it's not beneficial to his company. I think the issue is having common skill centers, mm-hmm, where the drivers are trained, and therefore companies can then will not compete to pinch for drivers from one place to another. It's just like someone like me, you know, or Stefan moving from one company to another. So I think that's the issue. But I think you are entitled for HRDF for training and.
Yep.
But then again, it's again comes down to perception. Have you done any Excel courses? Have you gone for any training courses on weekends? I'm pretty sure you have. Why? Because you want to be the best journalist, the best writer, the best editor that you could be. You make that effort to improve yourself in order to stay competitive. I'm hoping that truck drivers would develop the same attitude to say, I want to be the best truck driver that I can be. I'm going to take 2 days of my annual leave and I'm going to take some of my own money or government-funded scheme and I'm going to upgrade myself rather than waiting for a company to say, I'm going to send you for a training. Also, when we talk about cost, I think it's not just what you pay a trainer for the day and maybe the training cost, the aerial that you might have to rent. But you have to imagine or you have to remember that a truck driver that's not moving basically means that a company is not making money. Again, a truck standing or a driver not driving is the worst case scenario. So it's not just the money you pay for a driver, but it's also the fact that you need to still move the goods because otherwise you might be subject to conventional punishments and penalties and all that. So it's much more than just the bill that you're paying. And as I'd like to emphasize the fact that I'm hoping that truck drivers will come out themselves to say, okay, once a year I'm going to do something. To contrast that with Europe, in Europe you have to basically go for renewal of your license and you have to do a course, I think, 140 hours every 2 or 3 years, which you as a truck driver have to do on your own.
And a center like that will also improve the safety of the road.
Yeah,
more importantly,
yes. Yeah.
Other than just efficiency.
All right. Any more questions from the media? Okay. So before we end the Q&A session, then I would like to invite Ms. Stefan to actually share a few words with us about the upcoming MIBTC.
Yes. Okay. This is the second installment of the Malaysia International Bus, Truck and Component Exhibition. It's going to be held in the Mainz Convention Center, 14th to 16th of May. We have adopted the theme Drive Safe. We would like the exhibitors to join hands with us in order to help us make Malaysian roads safer. You would say, well, but this is all about business, this is about making money. Why would you adopt a theme like Drive Safe? Well, very simple. A safe driver is also a more economical driver. And an accident is also always an impact on businesses. So we hope that through a mindset change, people will drive safer and will basically be the better business partners helping the economy to grow. We will have another such media roundtable specifically on road safety. So you will get the invitation soon. And obviously there's a lot going on at MIBTC itself. We've got a networking night. We have business matchmaking already in place. There will be a driver competition where we will have ongoing test drives, so to say. If you have a driving license for a truck, you can even give it yourself a go. What else we've got? Yeah, that's it. You will also get in the next couple of days a podcast of this session here. So we have our sound guys in the corner there, so you can make full use of that. In the media pack, you should have the slides that we've seen earlier, along with background information on all these things.
All right, thank you, Stefan. So we will actually now end the Q&A session. So members of the media, if you have any other further questions, you can always approach our speakers directly. Or any information, you can always approach me or my colleagues. Okay, so actually there will be lunch served at next door. So you can please join us for lunch as well. So thank you for coming today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Come visit us at booth MO1 at Malaysia International Bus, Trucks and Components Expo from the 14th to the 16th of May 2015 to find out how Supercool can help bring values to the truck fleet operators.